Coaches Podcast is brought to you by Huddle. Huddle is a leading software company revolutionizing the way coaches and athletes prepare for and stay ahead of the competition. Huddle offers tools to edit and share video, offers tools to study video, create highlight films. That's how we use it. We use it mostly in recruiting. Anytime we come across a new name in our recruit database, go to huddle.com, type the kid's name in. Chances are they have a Huddle profile. We're able to watch film and study the kid before we go any further. Saves us a ton of money. We're not booking flights to see kids that aren't good enough. It saves us a ton of time. The best part about it, it's all online. Huddle has more than 150,000 active teams, almost 5.5 million users. About half that many users subscribe to our podcast. Huddle is the best in the business. Huddle, push play. For listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast, this is Adam Gordon, and today we have a very special episode and a great guest. Coming off a 25-win season and an NIT appearance, a year in which he was named the CAA Coach of the Year, Head Coach of College of Charleston, Earl Grant. Earl has worked for some of the best in the business, including Greg Marshall and Brad Brownell. Earl is one of the brightest and most up-and-coming stars in our profession. More importantly, he's a great guy. He has an unbelievable enthusiasm and passion for life, which comes across anytime you talk to him. If you've ever met him, you'll know exactly what I mean. Very fortunate to have him on the program. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy it. I know you'll enjoy it. We had a blast doing it. If you're in Phoenix for the Final Four, make sure you come by our Rising Coaches social. For more information, go to our Twitter page at Rising Coaches. All right, joining us today, Earl Grant. Earl, appreciate you being on the program. Head coach of College of Charleston. Earl, can you believe you spoke at our very first Rising Coaches Conference? Can you believe that was 7 years ago?
Yeah, it was a while back, and I remember that conference. It had a lot of great speakers there. Still have my notes from that conference. I actually took notes on some other guys who were speaking before and after me, but I tell you, time does fly. It seemed like it was just yesterday when we did that event out there. I think it was in Vegas.
It was in Vegas. That's right. And now here you are, just coming off a 25-win season, CAA Coach of the Year, in just your third year at College of Charleston. Earl, you grew up working the College of Charleston camps, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm really fortunate. Very fortunate to be here. I grew up here in the city and had a chance to work some of John Crest's basketball camps, you know, when he was here as a head coach. And obviously he's a legend, done a great job here over the years, and took the program from NAIA to Division I when they went to the TAC conference, which is now the Atlantic Sun. Then they eventually went to the SoCon, the Southern Conference. But he was here for, 20-plus years and did a great job and really made an impact on me when I was in high school, growing up here in the city. And I started working his camps. And I think he probably is the one that first planted the seed in me, maybe him and my high school coach, thinking about college basketball and wanting to be involved with college athletics. And so I'm really, really fortunate that I was able to have that experience growing up as a teen and watching his programs, while I was in high school.
Yeah, that's great. And then you went on to have a really successful playing career at Georgia College. And you told this story at our conference years ago, but sounds like when you finished up playing, you kind of were trying to figure out what to do. And you came really close to enlisting in the military, correct?
Yeah, I graduated college in 2000, went home for the summer, got home and started looking around and realizing it was midsummer, and my dad kept telling me, hey, look, you can be here, but I don't want you sleeping past 9 o'clock. You got to get up and get a job. And so what I did, I just kind of got me a few part-time jobs so I can save up some money. And I needed to find me a more reliable car. And once I got that car, I drove to Cincinnati to work basketball camp and you know, did a lot of little camps over the summer. I know I went to UT Chattanooga and Tennessee Tech and worked some camps. And then I went out to Summit, Mississippi, Joe Dean Dixie Basketball Camp at Southwest Mississippi College. And I think one of your Rising Star buddies is actually an assistant coach out there now. I don't know if he left. He was.
Yeah, Andy Farrell, still down there.
Yeah, I think Andy's down there in Summit. And, you know, went down there, had Joe Dean Dixie Basketball Camp. Joe Dean at the time was the AD at LSU. His son was the AD. Joe Dean Jr. was the AD at Birmingham Southern. But they had this camp they had been doing for several years. And I had worked it 2 or 3 years, actually while I was in college. In the summers, going down with my assistant coach, David Sokol, who coached me at Georgia College, and he introduced me to the camp. So this summer, I was coming back from Joe Dean Dixie Basketball Camp, and I was driving. And on the ride back from Summit to Charleston, about a 15-hour ride, it was kind of running through my mind, hey, you know, what it is that I want to do. And it was the end of July, and it was, you know, August was approaching, and usually in August, you head back to campus. You know, because it's time to get back on campus. You're a basketball player. It's time for you to, you know, start up the fall. And so when I drove back from Summit, I got to Charleston, and I made my mind up that night. It was a Sunday night. I think I'm going to just enlist in the Air Force, go in, let them pay for my master's, stay in for 4 years, maybe coach some, maybe play some with the all armed forces team, and then get out after 4 years and you know, and kind of see what was next. And so I went into the Air Force recruiting office on Monday morning, went in, talked to the guys, filled out some paperwork, and they told me I needed to come back on Wednesday to get registered, to get ready to go to boot camp and do my physical and things of that nature. And on Tuesday night, my college coach called me and asked me if I wanted to come back and be a graduate assistant. And this was in the generation of, this was during the time where there wasn't no cell phones. So he called me on the house phone, and that was the first time that I really learned. I tell young players and young coaches all the time, man, you got to be careful how you deal with people and how you treat people, because you don't know who's really watching. I never thought about being a graduate assistant there. He just called and asked, and obviously there was something that he saw when I played for him that maybe he thought I could be you know, a coach or a graduate assistant or something of that nature. But I never thought about it. So he called me out of the blue after not talking to him for 3 or 4 months. And that's kind of where my coaching career started, at Georgia College down in Milledgeville, Georgia.
Wow. That's an incredible story. So you spent 2 years there, and then your next stop is at the Citadel in Charleston. How did you get that job? What was that experience like?
Well, you know, Pat Dennis was a guy, again, relationship. It was all relationship. My first, I guess, 8 years in coaching was all based on relationship, dealing with somebody and they remember something. Because, you know, with Pat Dennis, he was at the Citadel at the time when I was growing up in the city here in Charleston. And, you know, he was recruiting me. So he did an in-home visit. He would call and try to get me to come downtown Charleston to play pickup with the players. You know, I just remember always returning his calls, because my dad always told me, you know, I don't care who calls. We're not going to pay for college. So if anybody call, you know, they're talking about, you know, recruiting, you need to deal with them the right way. I don't care what level it is. And so, you know, I learned that, hey, you know, you treat everybody with respect. So, you know, I didn't think I wanted to go to the Citadel per se and play there. I didn't know if I wanted to stay at home and play at a military academy at the time, but I knew that Pat Dennis, the coach at the time, was a really good man. He was recruiting me, and I needed to treat him with respect. And so I think just because of that, our relationship throughout the recruiting process, you know, 6 years later, here I am, 7 years later, you know, trying to stay in the coaching profession. and he hires me. But he hired me, and he didn't interview me. He just basically offered me the job. So I was very fortunate, you know, the way it started out with those two opportunities, especially Georgia College being a graduate assistant and then first Division I job being in my hometown at the Citadel.
What was it like being there? That's a hard place to win. What did you learn from your 2 years there?
Well, you know, it's weird. We didn't win a lot, but it was one of my best jobs that I've ever had. First of all, I was in a great city. So, you know, really, really enjoyed being back at home, having a place to live on my own with a little bit of money. That was a neat experience. So living in Charleston was great. The other thing that was really good about the job, you know, at the Southern Conference was a real good league. You know, you had Ed DeChillis at East Tennessee State at the time. He had a great program over there. Those guys were getting to the NCAA tournament. You had Bob McKillop. So, you know, you had some really good teams to watch and try to learn from. And those were watching those games and playing against those teams. It really inspired you to want to stay in coaching and get better at what you were doing. But then the other thing with it, you know, just the simple fact that the type of players that the institution attracted, you know, they were good kids. It was built in discipline. And so I really enjoyed dealing with the players and the kids, you know. And so it was a great experience. I think my first year we won 8-20, we went 8-25, and the next year we went like 9-28. And there was a guy named Pat Conroy, who was an author. He wrote all these books, actually related to Ed Conroy. And he came down to talk to the team one day and about hanging in there and embracing the suck and not giving up and, you know, staying close to each other as teammates. And then at the end, he talked to the staff and he said, "I really want you guys to read this book." It was the name of the book was My Losing Season. And he talked about, you know, when he played there, they had an 8-28 season. And so I laughed with him. I said, "I don't know if I really need to read the book." I said, "You know, I just lived everything that's in the book. I just lived it the last 2 years, going 8-25 and 9-28, you know." So, you know, but just it was a great experience working there, and I learned a lot.
So next you get on at Winthrop with Greg Marshall. He had already been there a couple of years, right? Was that thing rolling by the time you got there, or did you get there really for the peak of that ride?
Yeah, you know, I got there. Greg Marshall, you know, I got there. I think he was going into his fourth year when I got there. They went two or three back-to-back NCAA tournaments. And then the year before I got there, they were 16-14. And he had told me we were going, you know, he said, "Hey, just focus on recruiting. We're not going to be very good. We're going to have a starting point guard that's a freshman. Got a couple of young post players that hadn't developed yet. So just focus on recruiting. We're not going to be very good this first year. We're going to have to get through it." And we went 27-6. So I guess he didn't predict that one too well. But yeah, Greg, I mean, Greg gave me a great opportunity. I met Greg on the park, inner city, Charleston, in the Midnight Basketball League. He was an assistant coach at the College of Charleston at the time. And I met him. I was 16, 17 years old. And he was on the park one Friday night. We had these games, Midnight Basketball League. And so that's where our relationship started, just in the recreational centers when he would come down and recruit at the high school. You know, he would come down and recruit, and then the Midnight Basketball League, he would show up. So I think I was 17 or 18 years old. And so the same thing, when I left the Citadel to take the job at Winthrop, I didn't interview. I took the job in July, right before the first period started. And when I talked to Greg, basically he said, "Hey, look, I'm about to head out to go on the road. We'll see you when we get back. If you want the job, just go there, sign the paperwork, and we'll see you when we get back off the road." So the relationships and just dealing with people in the recruiting process, dealing with people when I was in high school, just coming down, playing pickup, and relationships, and those are the things that got me going in the business. Because, you know, when I went to Winthrop, I did that for 3 years, and we had great success. That last year, we beat Notre Dame in the first round of the NCAAs. second year. The second round, we played Oregon. We lost that game. And then we went to Wichita State, and that was a three-year run there as well. So, again, the biggest thing you can hear from me talking to you right here today and anybody that's listening is it's just the relationships. I mean, it's just this is a relationship business. It's a networking business. And how you treat people and how you deal with people is very important. I think that, you know, people are watching all the time and trying to figure out, you know, what type of person you are and things of that nature. So you gotta represent yourself well.
Hey, Earl, you mentioned recruiting and Coach Marshall told you to focus on that your first year. Did he sit you down and say, hey, when you go on the road, this is the type of guy that I want? I got to imagine you don't bring too many recruits to Greg Marshall that aren't naturally tough kids.
No, he didn't tell me that, but he didn't tell me that, but his wife told me.
Really?
Yeah, his wife told me.
What'd
you
say?
She told me, you know, you got to understand, you know, when you go recruit, I'm just trying to give you a little tip. You know, if the kid's not really, really tough, and he doesn't have attitude, and you know, Greg's not going to be able to coach him.
That's funny.
And so I remember that. And now the one thing Coach would always say, though, that jumped out to me, when I would come back off the road and I say, hey, you know, I saw this kid, he's a really talented player, and he'd always say, hey, can he rebound at 12 feet? Can he rebound at 12 feet? How athletic is he? Can he rebound at 12 feet? And so he was always wanting to know how long is the kid, you know, body type, how athletic is he, you know, can he guard, how tough is he? You know, it was all about toughness and guarding and athleticism.
Had you thought of that before you got there, or when you were at the Citadel? Did you just
I thought about it a little bit, but you know the problem is, you know, you at the Citadel, you couldn't recruit the way you really wanted to recruit.
Mm-hmm.
So those athletic long guys that you fall in love with, you know, if you fell in love with a kid, then that was the wrong kid. I mean,
right?
You know, because if you fell in love with him, it was hard to recruit him because other people really loved him. So you had to really evaluate that. The Citadel and figure out who you could get, but you had to evaluate. And we did a great job of recruiting. We got some good kids there, but I think the big thing for Greg in starting working for him at Winthrop and then on to Wichita State, it was all about athleticism and attitude and toughness. Can he guard? How long body type? You know, how long is he? He talked about quick twitch muscle fibers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, second jump guys. Can he rebound at 12 feet? You know, it was all of those type of things. And then, you know, hey, if he can do those things, we'll develop him.
What about you later went on to work for Brad Brownell at Clemson. What did he want? What kind of guys did he want in his program?
Well, you know what? He was similar in terms of – it wasn't so much athleticism, though. It was more – it had to be tough, and it had to be tough guys. You know, he liked the multi-sport guy, you know, a guy to play football, turns them on. And so it had to be a tough guy. But it was less – quick twitch muscle fiber, can he rebound at 12 feet, and more skill, you know, can he see, can he pass, you know, what's his IQ level? Because, you know, those guys come from a little bit different backgrounds. And, you know, Brad came out of the Bobby Knight background of motion offense and this man-to-man defense, where Greg came out of the John Kress idea. You know, John Kress was a old Lou Carnesecca, St. John's, New York Jets, NBA or ABA, whatever it was back then, but St. John's, the Red Storm, and, you know, New York City kids. And so it was a little different. One was IQ, feel, motion offense, you know, man-to-man defense. One was athleticism, quick twitch, length, and, you know, we're going to change defenses on you, so we're going to get out and transition. And I think that was the side that Greg was – he was more on that side of changing defenses. We're going to get out in transition. We're going to defend you, offensive rebound you. And Brad was, you know, move the ball, motion, IQ, feel. So it was a little different. And it actually was kind of hard when I first got with Brad because I came from Greg and we were looking for a certain type of kid. And I needed to try to figure out how to help Brad with the type of kid he wanted. I thought there were more athletic guys in the South. And it was easier to find that athletic, quick twitch, athletic, long second jump guy than it was the IQ and feel guy. So think it took us a little while to try to figure out exactly in evaluating players when I was at Clemson with Brad, who it was that we were going to try to get. And I think it took us a year or two to figure that out, what it did for me.
So what do you want from your players at Charleston? Is it kind of a combination of the two, or you like that?
Well, what I've learned is it's kind of a combination. You know, at first I didn't think that IQ and feel was important as much for the big guys. But then now I realize coaching at that power forward position, the four spot, is the game is changing. And so the game is getting smaller. And so what I've realized now is most people, their fives are really fours, and their fours are really threes. And so I've tried to stay consistent with the way it was, you know, playing a big power forward who can offensive rebound and score with his back to the basket. We got a guy like that. But what I started realizing is it's just so much easier when the four-man can shoot and pass. Before I went with Brad, I didn't think that way as much. But now I think more that way about the four-man, the power forward. Can he make a three? Can he drive it? Can he pass it a little bit? But the most important thing for me, what I've realized now that I've been a head coach for 3 years, I mean, I got to have toughness. I got to have an energy level guy, you know, enthusiasm. He needs to be quick twitch. You know, a lot of times I talk to my staff about, you know, finding guys that are forward built, you know, meaning they can pick up the ball and guard full court. They can deny a guy if they want to and eliminate him out of the game. You know, if they're competitive, they're going to contest shots. They're going to have a loose ball rolling. They're trying to get it. Like a competitive guy, like I don't have to tell you, hey, the loose ball is rolling. You need to try to go get it. Like, is this in their nature that if it's there, that's their ball? And so I realize I got to have guys like that. Now, you know, we can develop skill, but there's a balance. All of that quick twitch, all that athleticism, all of it's great toughness, but then there's a balance. Because what I found as I get older as a head coach, but in these short three years, the first two, we really, really, really defended you, and we didn't score a lot. Whereas now I've got more offensively talented, skilled guys, and we haven't lost anything from a toughness standpoint, but we're scoring the ball more because we are more skilled. We got more guys who can make plays. We got more guys who can make threes. And we're shooting the ball a little quicker. And so the games are faster now. And so now I'm realizing that scoring is a very, very good thing. I mean, you got to put the ball in the basket. And you can defend people well, but you got to put the ball in the basket. And you know, we had some games this year. We scored in the 90s, some in the 80s. And I was a little bit pissed off after the game because, you know, we gave up 70. And I said, well, I mean, we beat them 86-70, so I guess that ain't too bad. I was so used to beating people or winning games 65-57 that I had to adjust to winning a game 85-70. You know, and so it's really the same. We just played a little faster. So, but I want quick twitch. I want attitude guys, competitive guys. But now I got to have a blend of skill because I think that's very, very important where, you know, I wasn't thinking about as much skill 2 years ago. I was just thinking about toughness and athleticism and things of that nature. So it's a blend.
Does Jackie give your staff the same speech, you got to find toughness for my husband?
No, I don't think she really got to tell her.
You tell her.
I tell the guys all the time, yeah. Yeah, I tell the guys all the time, you know, we got to, you know, I do better with a tough kid. I mean, I just, my personality will do better with that kid because I don't have to coach his effort and his competitiveness. I can try to help him with his skill.
So, obviously, you guys recruit defensive-minded guys, and that sounds like something that Greg Marshall and Brad Brownell both wanted as well. But those guys, when you say those names, those are two of the best defensive coaches in the country and have been for years. What makes those guys, and they're very different. It seems like Greg Marshall's more in-your-face pressure, where Brad is more, I don't know, is he more in the gaps and more packed in, half-court man-to-man?
Yeah, it's more in the gaps. It's similar, you know.
What makes those guys such great defensive coaches?
Well, I mean, just accountability. They know what they, first of all, they know what they want to do. I mean, I think that's a big part of it. Like, it ain't no confusion about, okay, who we are and what we want to do on defense. And they know what they want to do. And then once, and when they're teaching it, they teach it with conviction, and they hold guys accountable. You know, it's pretty clear-cut rules. I mean, the ball's on the side. Don't let the freaking ball go middle. You know, when the ball's up top, you know, play them square. Post defense, get three-quarter, get around halfway. You know, we really don't do full front. Not a lot of trapping in the post. You know, ball screens, you know, you got one or two ways. And it ain't no confusion about what there is that we're doing. And so I think that both, again, they know what they want to do and they hold guys accountable. And I think that's why they've been successful defensively.
Are you similar in that regard? I mean, did you hit the ground running knowing exactly how you wanted to play, or did you take a year or two to try?
Yeah, my first year, I got the job in September. So that the thoughts in my mind about how I wanted to play, you know, I didn't get a chance to recruit. I didn't get a chance to sit anybody out. So I got the job in September, and the fall semester had already started. Those guys had been in school for a month. And so, you know, the way I thought I wanted to play versus the way we had to play were two different things. Because, you know, we were really big, and I tried to play big. And so with so many adjustments throughout the year, I changed a lot because – injuries and different rosters every 3 weeks. And the only thing that was consistent was the defense, you know. I mean, the defense was consistent. We were going to play man-to-man that first year. I knew I wanted to establish, hey, we're going to play man-to-man and we're going to try to guard people. And we guarded pretty well. Just offensively, we had a hard time scoring. I think we averaged 58 points that year. But we had some injuries and we didn't have, you know, a set roster. Every third game, there was something different going on. So, but then what I found out was that next year, and obviously this past year, this year two and year three, we didn't change a lot. We found a set way of how we're going to play our motion offense. We had some set plays we were going to run. We had a couple, you know, false movement to a ball screen type actions that we really liked that were working well for our personnel. We were doing this, some similar things in transition of how we wanted to do miss offense. And then, you know, we played man-to-man. But we always had our change-up, you know, which was a 2-2-1 back to a 1-1-3. And we did that this year. It really helped us this year in some crucial games. And last year, in year two, we went 17-14. We started to play that zone some as well. But this year, it really helped us. And so that's who we are. You know, we'll press you some. We'll pressure some on dead balls and free throws. We'll zone press some on makes, and then we're going to guard you man-to-man.
Earl, you do some things with your team now. I remember we talked maybe a month or two ago, and you were telling me about some of the things you chart. And I think it's different for every player. Can you talk a little bit about that, charting different things? I think you said
everybody has a game plan for success, you know, so that's their game plan, that's their role, that's their box, you know, we call it the box.
Every player has that.
Yeah, every player got a box. Everybody got something in their box, you know, their game plan for success. Just a sheet of paper, and you know, based on who they are and what the team needs, we tell them what it is. So, you know, it might be one kid, we say, hey, look, you know, we call them energy-giving behaviors. One kid, it might just be, hey, look, we need you to go hunt as many offensive rebounds as you can. That's one of the main things you got to do. We need you to sprint the floor in 5 seconds. Every rep you get, you're only playing 14 minutes. When you're on the floor and we get a defensive rebound, we need you to sprint the floor in 5 seconds. You got to run. So now what happens is, and every kid has a different thing in their box, but what happens is, you can go back after the game and you can say, okay, how did you do with the three things you had in your box? Like one kid might be, hey, you know, we need you to, we like to jam the ball. So we have guys pick up the ball full court. We need you to get at 95% jamming rate. You know, like, you're forgetting to jam. You ain't doing a good job of jamming the ball. So, you know, we need to get you at 95%. Then there's going to be a few times you don't get to jam. You don't get to pick them up full court. But you know, we need you to do a better job of getting there. So I think what it helps the assistants and the players where if you only got three things in your box and you're responsible for four kids in your position group, then after the game, when you go watch film with the kid, all you got to do is say, hey, look, you had 12 opportunities to go to the offensive glass. You only went four times. Okay, so you only got one offensive rebound. Well, do the common math. If you went more, maybe you would have got three offensive rebounds. And so now get that kid thinking about that. And then also, you know, hey, look, you played 12 minutes. We got the defensive rebound, the outlet to the point guard. Like, you barely got past half court. Like, you got to sprint, man. Sprint for layups. If you don't get layups, run to the corner. But you got to run harder. And so I think it helps the players because it's a set role. It's a role that you talk about with them all the time. And it can change throughout the year as you want to add something to their box, something else you think that kid should be able to bring to the table. But I think less is more. Mm-hmm. You know, just having three or four things, probably four things max, it just gives the kids a defined role.
Did you chart your point guard's high fives?
Yeah, you know, one of the point guards, that was one of the deals, high fives, daps. You know, touches, you know, putting your arms around guys in huddles. And so you have a manager, you know, he can do some of that. But in practice, we'll do the daps sometimes as well. And we would have a manager with a, you know, charting it. How many daps did he facilitate? And so I think, you know, again, for a point guard, you forcing him to be vocal, you can be vocal by saying things, or you can be vocal by pointing and touching. And that's, to me, that ain't vocal in terms of talking. But you still communicating. You still communicating without saying a word when you dap somebody or touch a hand or put your arm around them. And so just forcing that kid and teaching that kid how to be a better leader and then focusing on that with him. And so get him thinking about that. So if you're doing it in practice and you're charting it in practice and he get in the game, then he always looking to dap guys or point at guys or huddle guys or put his arm around guys. So that's really all you're trying to do. And it depends on the kids. You know, if it's something you think those kids can do, then you do it.
I love that. Tell me about your bench. What do you have going on with your bench?
Well, I mean, obviously all the assistant coaches charting different things. You know, we got a bench captain. You know, probably a lot of times, not all the time, but this year it was a guy that didn't play a ton, but a guy that put a lot of energy and effort and labor into the program over the years, an older guy. And he just in charge of the bench. Hey, you know, just that's your bench. Take control of the bench. Guys should be out clapping. When somebody come out of the game, they should be standing clapping. You know, if somebody go hunt the energy-giving behaviors, big-time offensive rebound, big-time charge, big-time loose ball, then you guys got to be up clapping. You know, the bench need to be on fire. The bench need to be excited. That was his job, you know. And then we got a guy counting, you know, how many stops we can get in a row. He's charting it. Holding up cards, color-coded, let the players on the floor know where we are and what we're trying to do. And so everybody got a job, you know, on the bench, assistant coaches, a couple players that maybe don't get in the game that are over there and they're responsible for different things. And then the other guys, the subs who are just sitting on the side, just, you know, we always say, hey, man, you know, the bench got to be – you got to fuel your teammates up, you know. You got to fuel them up. When they look over, you got to fuel them up. You're either going to fuel them or you're going to train them. And bad body language and you know, guy make a big-time charge or big-time loose ball and nobody's standing, that drains you. But if guys are jumping up, clapping, and showing some enthusiasm, then that fuels you. So that's really what we try to do with the bench is make sure the guys are fueling their teammates up and giving them the energy they would want when they're not on the bench, but they're on the floor and they look over at the bench. You know, you always got to look at it from that standpoint. If you're on the floor, when you look over at the bench, what do you want to see if you're the guy out on the floor playing? So those are some of the things we do with the bench.